Turn it up.
Get ready.
You're tuned in to VO Buzz Weekly.
The show where aspiring voice actors,
established VO pros,
and curious fans alike get to meet and learn.
From the mega successful talent in voiceover.
Hear their personal stories.
Find out how they became so successful.
Learn their secrets and join them at the top.
Come on,
get seriously buzzed with your hosts, Chuck Duran and Stacey J. Aswad.
Hey everybody, I'm Stacey J.
And I'm Chuck Duran.
Welcome to another amazing episode of VO Buzz Weekly.
That's right, and amazing is correct. Now, I know we always say we have an amazing show, but I gotta tell you, I'm so excited today because we actually do. Not that we ever don't, but we're very, very excited. We have Joan Baker, which a lot of you may already know, and Rudy Gaskins. And they are going to, your head's going to explode after you watch these shows, right? They're going to get so much good stuff.
Sounds painful.
We have some really awesome news for you.
We do.
What is it, Stace?
We are very excited and honored to announce that Sennheiser Neumann is our official microphone and has joined our list of sponsors. Thank you so much to Chris Currier and everyone at Sennheiser Neumann. We're so honored to be a part of your team and for you to be a part of ours. They are our official microphone, and
absolutely,
as if that's not wonderful,
hold on,
they have endorsed VO Buzz Weekly, they have endorsed me as a voice actor, and they have endorsed Chuck as a demo producer. So bring it on. It is Sennheiser Neumann VO Buzz Weekly. Domination of the universe.
You know it. So if we sound really awesome right now,
yeah,
and if the show now starts sounding even better than it used to, then you know why.
Exactly. So thank you so much. And Chuck?
Yes.
It's time for Joan and Rudy.
Let's go there now.
Okay, you guys, the energy in the studio today is positively electric, thanks to our amazing guests. She is a Neumann-endorsed voice actor, author, producer, and teacher. He is an Emmy Award-winning producer, director, writer, and branding expert. Together, they are the founders and driving force behind the branding company Push Creative in New York City and the epic voiceover event, That's Voiceover. Check it out. I hope you're ready to get super buzzed because we are with the dynamic and dazzling team of Rudy Gaskins and Joan Baker.
Super buzzed.
Hallelujah. Wow. It's Superman.
Very funny.
It's Superman.
No. I was trying to help you there.
Hi.
As we mentioned, this is going to be nuts today.
It's a pleasure.
Love it. Love it.
You are, first of all, I got to tell you, you look beautiful.
Right? Stunning.
Out of this world.
Chuck.
The first thing Joan says when she gets out of her car is, close your eyes. I brought a little piece of New York with me. So we closed our eyes, opened our eyes, and we see
and
this.
And Norma Kamali.
We're like, holy Toledo.
I'm thinking, as a New York girl, she's going to bring me a good New York bagel.
Yeah.
No, and she brought me fabulousness.
Absolutely. And then Rudy's like, hello? Yeah. What about me?
Hey.
I want some of this
Jeans.
Is New York. They're like, yeah, you
but
look great too,
you know,
Rudy.
Black and white is very on trend,
right?
So
it
okay,
is.
Good.
Exactly.
I knew that.
Yeah. You guys are here from New York, and you graciously made time to be with us today. Because you guys, via Skype, it's just not the same thing. We said we have to have them in the studio. So thank you for
fitting
us in. We know you're in demand while you're out here this week.
We love it. The schedule is like a doctor's schedule. Bam, bam, bam.
Yeah.
Except we can't keep people waiting the way doctors did.
Right.
Exactly.
It's like exactly.
Nobody will allow that.
Exactly.
Okay, you're done. Next.
Yes. Then they just call you a diva.
Yeah, right?
Right.
All right, well, let's jump in.
We're going
to
get right into it. So, Joan, we're going to start with you.
Yes.
Okay.
You actually started your stardom.
Yes.
As a child.
Yes.
Right?
I was a child actor.
So, can you please elaborate on it and tell us a little bit about your story?
Sure. Well, since I can remember, I always wanted to be a dancer, an actress, and a humanitarian. I didn't know if I knew the word humanitarian, but I wanted to be someone that was healing.
Mm-hmm.
So at some point, I told what I wanted to do to my mom and my dad, and everyone knew, everyone around me knew. And then at one point, a neighbor was in the Marin Shakespeare Festival, which was it's actually a global Shakespeare festival that people would come all over the United States, famous mm-hmm. actors and everything. Well, there happened to be a slot open, and my neighbor was in it, told my mom, I auditioned for it, I got in. That was the start of my dream coming true about being an actor. So from there, I ended up getting an agent, a top agent in San Francisco, mm-hmm. and then I auditioned for a television show, which only ran in the Bay Area or in California. It was called Whatchamacallit.
Whatchamacallit.
Yes.
Not the candy bar.
No.
The TV show.
And Whatchamacallit was a show that us kids wrote the show. We had directors and producers and stuff, but it was a very unique concept. It was very popular. It was on Channel 5 at 7:30 on Mondays. And the interesting thing was when I auditioned, and you guys, this was the best audition I ever had in my life, okay? I go there to this house in San Francisco. There's like 100 kids waiting to audition for one role. The original girl was leaving, and then there's three guys left, and they were looking for the new girl. So because I had an agent appointment, I went in, I sat down, and the producer said to me, she said, so Joni, she said, tell me how your day went. To this day, I don't remember what exactly I said, but when I looked up, she was literally pounding her desk with tears coming out of her eyes. She said, oh, hold it right there, let me get the director. She comes back with the director, and she said, tell the director exactly what you told me. Whatever I said, yeah. I look up, and they're both pounding the table, tears out of their eyes, and I got hired.
And you have no idea what you said.
I don't remember. Still? Because I was really young. Yes, I've tried to remember.
Maybe we need to hypnotize you.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm ready for that, Stacey.
She's already
ready. I'm already ready for that. No, I don't know what I said, but for whatever reason, it hit the moment in such a way that it was unforgettable. I was like, I'm someone that... As a kid, I had a lot of adventures. I really am someone that I love life with all my heart, and that's how I approached it. And so whatever I told her must have been something sounding outlandish that, you know what I mean?
You couldn't make up.
Not the average kid. Right.
Yeah. Exactly. In the moment, live.
Exactly.
Your mom
is not going
to
prepare
you for that
piece to that, which is that her whole family.
Yeah.
Three brothers,
Rudy's
mother, father.
Tell us the truth.
Rudy, were you there, Rudy?
There's another piece to that story.
Thank you, Judge Judy.
Her entire family would watch this show, Whatchamacallit, in one room, and she'd watch by herself in a little black and white television in another room.
Because?
Because she needed to be by herself. She didn't want to see herself on television with the whole family there with her.
She was shy?
Yeah, I'm still kind of like that. Yeah.
Wow.
It takes me a while.
You're not. Get out of here. You liar.
Yes, I am not.
Get out of here.
I am not. No, I'll do anything in front of camera, but then to watch it later,
I know
what I'm talking about,
exactly.
But I will do anything, anything,
whoa,
in front of a camera.
Yeah.
That's fun. Get your minds out of the gutter, people.
Too late.
So you've
been very open about being biracial.
Yes.
And what that was like growing up and how it's affected you even as a voice actor. Do you want to share that?
Well, you know, I grew up in a time where even now, I mean, if you look at that Cheerios commercial that's out, right, it's getting a lot of flack, right? So imagine growing up in the 60s, late 60s and 70s. And I grew up in an all-white community, and it was there was a lot of trials and tribulations just for me showing up in the room. And I was a kid that was very, very sensitive. And some of the things that were said to me by adults were so shocking and so mean, and it was constant, that I ended up, to bypass that, I ended up being the ultimate people pleaser. So I couldn't afford to have anyone get mad at me. If someone even gave me a funny look, I would go out of my way to make sure that that didn't mean what I thought it could mean. I just couldn't tolerate anger towards me because I was getting it in abundance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also as a kid, I didn't know why. Like, I didn't know why it was because I was biracial. I thought it was because people saw something in me that was ugly. Mm. Mm-hmm. So I really took that on. And it took every bone in my body to see it differently and to then behave differently towards myself. It took every bone in my body. It was really heartbreaking, I thought, and it was so unnecessary. But
Absolutely.
Also,
it still is unnecessary.
It's still unnecessary, and it's ridiculous. And I'm telling you, shocking what adults and teachers in particular would say. Call me dunce. Sit me in the back of the room. Point to me and say things like, this is someone you don't want to be like. Telling this to the class.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
When I was in school, I never heard anything.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up here in California.
But you came from Cuba, You said to your family, everyone was speaking Spanish, and I mean, you speak Spanish, but you said, "I'm in America. I'm going to speak English," because you didn't want to be the
different.
Foreign.
That was the only thing a teacher told me in kindergarten. Said, you're in America now, and you should speak English. And I didn't look at that as a bad thing. I'm like, oh, okay. So I went home and never spoke Spanish again.
But you also, to look at you, you wouldn't necessarily, I don't know what you look like as a kid, but you don't look like you're Cuban.
Right.
I look like I was from another planet compared to everybody else.
Yeah.
But what I think is, I think it's very inspiring that you took something that was so devastating and degrading, and clearly that informs your courage now and your fearlessness now as a performer. Has it affected your voice acting?
No. The thing that affects my voice acting might be the fact that I'm female.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course.
Right? But not biracial, and that's why I was able to kind of slip in, because what people would tell me or what agents would tell me, I got told all kinds of things like, well, you know what, if your skin color was that of a paper bag, we could cast you. I would get all kinds of things.
Because you were doing
on camera. Yes, I was trying to do on camera. But I was always told, oh, you're really great, but we don't know what to do with you. Or what exactly are you?
Yeah.
You know? Or sometimes in the black community, it's looked at, like, if you look at me, you could see that there's another mix besides black. So people would say, if your skin color was darker, it'd be easy to cast you. But because it's, yellow, green,
it's like a
reddish,
tannish. You just look like a tan hot chick. I mean, hello. It's
like,
I don't know what the problem is out there.
I love my dad. Do you know how many people spend a lot of money in Los Angeles to get the beautiful color skin that you have?
But can I tell you?
Get that exact shade. You should bottle it. Give it a name. Give it a Pantone color.
The lips, that was a joke. That was a joke.
Yeah.
The skin color, that was a joke. Even the texture of my hair, it was looked at like you couldn't be more ugly. I mean, people would literally tell me I was ugly. Kids, adults, you name it.
Well, no more of that.
No.
That ends now.
I'm with you on that one.
Okay, Rudy, what was the motivation of you're in Washington, D.C., and you say, no, I'm going to go to New York? Why?
Film school. Directing film. See, I stayed in D.C. to go to study architecture originally.
Okay.
And I had a choice in high school, architecture or film school. But what I didn't understand was that film actually led to paying jobs. I thought it was just for fun because all my film experience had been to make whatever I wanted.
Yeah.
And, after school program in film at George Washington University. And I said, well, I'm going to have to make a living. So I chose architecture. And I did a year in architecture, and it took that year. Amazing how naive we can be at a young age. But it took that year to figure out that everything I'm seeing on television is people making money. What do I mean I can't make money in film?
You're a quick study, Gaskin.
That's right. So, only took a year, baby, but you did it.
A year later, I switched and went to New York. And it wasn't easy because, I wasn't making any money. So I basically hitchhiked to New York and slept in the park for one night.
You slept in a what?
I slept at Washington Square Park.
I was going to say Washington Square Park.
That's NYU.
Yeah.
I thought it was safe. I didn't know any better.
When Rudy hitchhiked, though, how many rides did you get? You got on three different...
I don't know. Yeah, two or three rides. Yeah, the last one was a big 18-wheeler McDonald's truck.
Wow.
Dropped me off at a McDonald's.
Of course. That was his stop. Okay,
Where are you going? I'm heading to McDonald's.
We're here. I'm grabbing myself an Ed McMuffin.
Fries with that?
Yeah. And you know what was really great is I wake up that morning sleeping on the bench using my little briefcase. That's all I brought with
you
me as my
pigeons.
Pillow.
Yeah.
I wake up with the pigeons and a movie beginning. They were starting to shoot a movie. So I wake up and there's a film taking place around me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so that's how I got to New York and did my interview at NYU and, of course, went to NYU and studied filmmaking. And the rest is history, as they say.
Well, and also you had an apartment for a year where you didn't have electricity because you couldn't afford it.
I had to cut some corners.
So he paid some dues.
Yeah. Yes.
You lived in an apartment for a year with no electricity, for real?
With no electricity and no heat. I mean, I was a vegetarian. I was eating mostly
and
raw.
No heat in New York. And you were like...
Yeah.
You had some blankets, though.
No, sorry. There was heat, but there was no gas.
Oh, no gas.
Oh,
yeah.
So I couldn't have my... look at you overreacting. You had heat.
No electricity.
You had heat.
No stove.
What's
I'm eating, like, watermelon and oranges and cantaloupe.
It's perfect for raw food. It's nice for
it's perfect.
I did a lot of photography projects by candlelight. So
that became
the theme of my work for one whole semester was, like, candlelight photography.
Candlelight photography.
So then how did you go from that to voiceover? How did you get involved?
From film to voiceover.
Well,
as it turns out, and this gets overlooked a lot when it comes to the media, is, you know, a huge percentage of everything we do in the media requires some level of voiceover.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so I got into documentary filmmaking, and of course we needed narrators.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was my very first experience with using voiceover talent and even becoming aware of the fact that there were key talent out there in the voiceover industry that were well known and respected, and that producers wanted those people.
Who was the first person you became aware of that was?
Well, as a voice talent,
yeah.
It was actually not a voice talent, but a real person, a doctor. And it's interesting because he wasn't used to being on camera, and he wasn't used to handling a script off camera.
Oh.
So it took there were two levels on which we had to work with him. Directorially. One was to get him used to looking directly down the barrel of a camera,
mm-hmm.
because that was the style in which we shot the documentary.
Right.
And then for all the stuff we had to fill in later, getting him to sort of match his tone and work in a booth
mm-hmm.
was a whole other animal.
Right.
But it was, you know, it was
right.
fun and interesting, and he
picked
up on
it.
That's why you've
won an
Emmy.
Yes. Right, exactly.
Doing that behind
because
the scenes
the
work.
Skill and the patience to
candlelight
to do
to Emmy.
Have you done any voiceover work yourself?
I have done some voiceover work.
Are you good?
Are you good?
That's a good question.
I'm probably like pretty good. You know, most of my voiceover work was scratch track.
Right.
I'm trying to get that in the union. They won't listen to me.
Sorry, Rudy, no scratch track.
Is that actually why you're here this week? You're trying to get the scratch track?
Scratch track union!
Yeah. But what you realize as a producer when you're doing these scratch tracks is you have to deliver something that a voiceover actor can actually match.
Yes.
So you can't read it too quickly or too slow. Mm-hmm. You've got to really do it.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to bring everything
you
know that's required.
Don't you just love him?
Totally.
He is such heart for us actors,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah, well I do. And so what I discovered was that voice actors would come in, hear the scratch track, and say, oh, okay, I can
got
do that.
Yeah.
And they would compliment me later and say,
thanks.
I'm glad you did it this way because the other guy does it too fast and he thinks we can do it that way and it's impossible. So I started to develop a real fondness for the craft.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually I asked a voice actor to reverse roles with me. I said, I need to know what
That's
you experience
smart.
In the booth
because
I'm directing you guys and it's all from one point of view.
Yeah.
And he put me in the booth, Fred Collins, who's in Joan's book, Secrets of Voiceover Success.
Mm-hmm.
And
one of the first voices on TV, actually, live television.
Mm-hmm. Fred Collins put me through the paces, and his main objective was to get me to focus on each individual word as a note of music and not let anything slip by.
Mm.
I had never thought about that. And I'm the writer of these scripts, and I'm never thinking about that. And so he put me through the paces. I do some spots with him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not ready for prime time by any means, but it certainly allowed me to grow in terms of understanding what it takes and what to listen for when
That's
voice actors are in the booth.
That's a wonderful sensitivity to
Absolutely.
Have, though, because you can pull that out of the actress you're working with.
Which she does.
Mm-hmm.
She's really known for bringing people out, bringing the emotions and colors out in such a loving, caring,
Chuck is great at that. You're great at that, too.
I am great at that, but we're not talking about me right now. We're talking about Rudy. Stop it.
Just trying
I love her.
Yeah.
I totally see that, Rudy, because you're very calm.
Yeah.
And
like Joan.
Like Joan. Exactly.
Matching pair.
Exactly. You know, she probably takes a little bit more sugar in her coffee than you do.
Yeah.
but no, you can totally tell that you're just very warm and easy to work with, and that you communicate well.
Yes.
You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yes.
Because there's no sense of urgency. You're just like, no, let's just get it right, you know? And
right.
And you have,
you're right, Chuck.
You seem like you have the actor, the voice actor, in mind.
Mm-hmm. I do.
Totally.
And the actor wants to do a great job. And the actors are usually just rich with all sorts of stuff that if you just give them a chance,
yeah.
you'll get a chance to utilize
yeah.
that stuff.
Absolutely,
right.
man. You're so
yeah.
right. That's
it's
brilliant.
It is.
Yeah.
That was brilliant, people.
That was brilliant. So, Joan, how did you get into voiceover?
Well, for me, I fell into it. And for me, that was perfect. Because I had no expectation. I didn't know anything about it. And there is something about beginner's luck that mm-hmm. is magic.
Yeah. Yes.
And it has been for me in many instances in my life. So because I could not get an on-camera agent, I could not get a job, everyone was telling me, you know, you just don't really fit in. We don't know what to do with you. I happened to do this character on cable, and this is before cable was cable. And I was reporting on the nightlife in New York. It was a very funny show. Mm-hmm. And I afterwards went to my manager. I had a manager at the time. I went to his house, and there was something very empty. I felt very upset that I wasn't utilizing my talents the way I could. Mm-hmm. I happened to look in Backstage Magazine, and I saw this ad for voiceover, and it said regular voice, cartoon, and character. And I went, you know what? I've always been able to do cartoon voices just naturally. Mm-hmm. Even in the dance world, I'd ask a question. Instead of asking it as me, I'd like do like some character and ask, you know, how was that pot-a-beret thing you just did? Can you demonstrate that again? You know, everyone would laugh. You know. But I didn't know it was like a living or anything.
Yeah.
So the woman's name in the ad was named Joni. And that's my name. And I thought, you know what? I want to check her out. And I'm not going to put any goals to it because I was always very goal oriented. Mm-hmm. So I said, no goals. I'm going to check it out. What do I have to lose? I took 4 lessons, did an amazing demo reel. I didn't know it was amazing. I was happy about it. And then I started at the top agents in New York, and by the time I hit the first one, they were interested.
Beautiful. Mm-hmm.
It was a miracle,
that's
Chuck.
It happens all the time. What
it
are you talking about?
It was a miracle.
Oh, it was destiny.
No, literally, one of the agents said, I was in the elevator, and this very distinguished man was in the elevator, and he said, where are you going? I said, oh, I'm going to Abrams Artists. And he said, oh, that's my agent. And I said, oh. I said, do you think they'd listen to a demo reel? Because I just made one. He said, I'm not sure. Then he got out the elevator and went ahead of me. And I got up to the receptionist. And then the agent came out. The distinguished man left. The agent came out and said, I'd love to talk to you. And I was like, oh.
What?
I go into his office. He closed the door. And then he said, I want to ask you something. He said, are you related to that man out there? I said, no. He said, do you know who he is? I said, no. He's one of the top figures in voiceover today. He makes 6 figures. You know, he makes 6 figures for us. So he said, he wants me to listen to your demo reel.
Oh, wow.
And I was like,
and you're
wow.
like, well, then you better.
That's right. I was like, wow.
Way to make an impression in the elevator there, Jimmy.
I'm telling you. So,
were you wearing that dress?
Maybe I was, and maybe I wasn't, Chuck.
Something
those,
similar, probably.
Those details will go with the whatchamacallit
story.
That's right. Yeah. She doesn't remember.
No, that's in part 2, people. Part 2. So... listen to my demo reel within 5 seconds. Yes, that's 5 seconds. He turns off the tape, calls the secretary, and says, hold all my calls. A dream come true.
Wow, Joan.
Listen to the demo reel. And
calls.
Actually, at the time, it was 3 minutes. We know
not
that's not happening today.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was a lot of character voice mixed in with my regular voice. Mm-hmm. They sent me out on an audition. Then I went to another agency and they called me in and they ended up signing me on Valentine's Day. And then the other agent I had to call to say, I signed with this other agent. He said, you signed with our arch enemy. How could you? You know, I didn't know all this stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
All I knew was somebody was interested in me finally.
So wait, how long did that take you though? From the moment you had your demo to the moment you got representation?
Not long. I did the demo in November. I had done artwork on it by December. By January, I was out there. By Valentine's Day, I got signed. Mm. Because my philosophy is, I've been someone that feels like life has held them back at the gate.
Yeah.
So I was literally bursting at the seams, mm-hmm. and I love people. Mm-hmm. So you mix the two together, and I was out there. There was no fear. There was no expectation. Mm-hmm. I just knew that I was really proud that I had had some evidence of my talent.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to get it out there. Mm-hmm. And it was at a time when you could go into buildings. You can't really do that today.
Yeah.
Especially in New York, even though it's gotten better. But you could go into all the buildings. That's also how I got one of my first jobs. I went to Nickelodeon. I literally asked for the person. I got the Rolodex of my agent. Because
I can see her doing this. That's what's funny is I can actually see her doing
this. Oh, there's a call for you.
Well, my agent said, when I got signed at Buckwall, she said, I can't remember the last time we signed on a newcomer. She said, usually we only take people, and again, this was new information.
People.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so I felt like I had to make up for that. So I wanted to get out there and meet the people. I could only before that meet the secretaries, right? Or the receptionists.
Right.
I could never get past that. So with her Rolodex, and she was like, I went out and I literally met everyone that I could in New York. So a couple things I had to send, but I literally made a point to meet everyone. And as I did that, I would audition for people. Bring my monkey and, you know, do my little dance. And I started getting work immediately. Mm-hmm. And I know that my agency was very happy. They're like, there's no one like you, that no one goes out there and meets the people.
Well, I was going to say, you had, I mean, because there's lots of people that have agents.
Yes.
That aren't getting auditions or aren't getting work. You know, you take an agent who believes in you and you combine that with you working your own business and creating your own opportunities where you can. And that is a powerful, beautiful combination, which kind of leads us to the incredible thing that you guys have been doing called That's VoiceOver, mm-hmm. which is you're giving back. Shockingly, mm-hmm. the VoiceOver community gives back. Yeah. You guys are giving back in a big way by creating this event and doing it in multiple, you know, different cities all over. You move it around, which I think is so great mm-hmm. to accommodate. So this year, it's August 17th at the Directors Guild in Los Angeles.
Yes.
Right on the Sunset Strip.
Which is on a
location.
Saturday.
Yeah. So first of all, let's talk about, how did That's VoiceOver come to be?
Well, That's VoiceOver originally came out of the book, Secrets of VoiceOver Success, mm-hmm. which contains 21 different stories of the journeys of different voiceover actors. And when we started doing book signings around that book, there was, of course, question and answer. And we noticed right away, boy, we don't have the time to answer all the questions that are coming up, and they're coming fast and furious. We were also surprised at the number of people who would show up for the book signings from all walks of life interested in voiceover. Mm. And someone said to me at one of these book signings, you're going to have to take this show on the road. Mm. Just sort of kidding.
Yeah.
And I looked at the scenario and watched what was going on and said, yeah, we need a bigger venue. A lot of people want this information. There's not enough time to do it. And so we started looking at larger venues. First, we did Learning Annex, mm-hmm. which, and they would bring in all the people, and they had kiosk all over New York City, so mm-hmm. you had that as a marketing venue.
Right, so we didn't have to worry about ticket sales.
Right,
Right. And so then 200 people would come. But still, it wasn't big enough. It wasn't long enough. 3 hours wasn't long enough to answer all the sorts of questions that people had. But it was so much fun bringing the different talent from the book into play, and we just continued to look for larger venues and better ways to disseminate more information. And until we came up with That's VoiceOver, and picked a nice, beautiful venue at the New York Times building mm-hmm. in New York, and
which
tried
was our
it
first
on.
One.
We tried it on for size, and it was extraordinary. I mean, people just left. I was amazed as a producer. I was amazed at how fulfilled people were mm-hmm. by this event.
That's beautiful.
And mm-hmm. also the voiceover actors who are always behind the scenes. They rarely get recognized for what they do.
Yeah.
So to see them
light
you know,
up.
Basking in the glory of all these people who want to meet them mm-hmm. and who mm-hmm. want to do what they do and to finally see them get that recognition, even from each other.
Sure.
I mean, many of them, like Don LaFontaine was in the mix back then when we first started.
Right.
He was thrilled to meet certain guys that he had never met before, and they're all thrilled to meet
and
him.
And then that guy would come up to me and say, Don LaFontaine just said he was so happy to meet me. He
exactly.
always wants it.
Yeah.
That's priceless.
Yeah. Totally.
So that's sort of how That's VoiceOver mm-hmm. came into being, mm-hmm. looking for a way to bring more information about the business out there and at the same time to elevate the level of the conversation
right.
around the industry.
Yeah. What is your strategy? Because you really, I mean, it's, you guys really cover so much, and you really think about it from someone breaking into the business, someone established in the business, maybe wants to go to the next level, somebody who's a working pro. I mean, you really address all the different potential levels that someone could be at in the business.
Well, I think for myself and creating That's VoiceOver, that one of the things that excited me was the fact that the people, like the VoiceOver people involved, I felt like I was creating opportunity for their leadership in an area like book signing and books, and then these live events that hadn't been happening. But it was a way for them to express their leadership, and I think that that is healing. That shifts people's consciousness about themselves, right? And that's what was priceless to me, and creating opportunity where there wasn't opportunity. Mm-hmm. Not just for us VoiceOver people, but for the people that needed the information. And there's a lot of false information about VoiceOver, and it just so happens the false information is all how easy and how
it's quick, easy, it's, money, Joan.
And not only that, it's a side thing. You know,
it was only easy for her.
That was an unusual story.
It took you a year to get an agent? It took you 12 and a half seconds.
No, but before,
yeah,
it was decades of trying and trying.
That's true. Yeah.
So
Well, so if you can talk to someone out there, what is it that someone would get out of That's VoiceOver? What, why should they attend? What is it that they can?
Well, I think that's kind of a loaded question, because there's many, many things that one can get depending on where they are in the industry.
Right.
But I do think one of the number one things is becoming unstoppable in an area that is so layered that even when you're in VoiceOver, you don't quite understand how all the pieces come together. But it really gives a clear picture of the industry and where you might fit in, regardless of the level you're at.
Right. Right.
And that creates unstoppability.
There you go.
And possibility.
You have people that represent the gear side. You have people like Pat Fraley and Nancy Wolfson.
Right.
You've got, you know, you've
we have
got
the top
agents,
casting agents,
directors.
Top, right, top talent agencies, top casting directors, top VoiceOver talent, and we have you guys.
And of course, oh my gosh,
we'll sign some autographs,
that's right,
take some pictures
that's
with you,
right,
whatever
that's
you want.
Right.
We're going to get
there's also
with
the sponsors.
You in person.
Yeah. You know, the sponsors, people kind of think of the sponsors or the exhibitors as sort of like the salespeople on the side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But those folks have so much information
that they are
salespeople, and so they're interested in talking to you.
Yes.
And they will answer questions for you. Talk to your exhibitors, because they are intelligent experts about all sorts of things, the gear, the microphones, the various services that some people provide for the industry. Mm-hmm. So you want to know these people on a first name basis.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And
it's
an opportunity that a lot of people miss. They kind of bypass it.
Yep. See, you want to network with everybody, not just an agent, not just casting people, right? Not just your peers. You want to network with everyone, because everyone is an integral part of VoiceOver. And it's also a very relationship-based industry.
Absolutely.
And that's why I showed up in all those when I look at the skyscrapers of New York City, I know I've been in all those buildings networking.
The entire city was her office place.
Her code name in New York is the elevator lady.
The elevator lady. Yeah, do you know her?
Yeah, the elevator lady.
Oh, she's been here.
Oh, hi, Joe.
I'll never forget that day.
She pushed off and she wouldn't let me out of the elevator.
That's
time. Right. Okay, so nuts and bolts. That's voiceover.com.
Yes.
Tell people what is the best way that someone can
attend.
Get themselves there.
Okay.
Yeah.
The best thing to do is to go to that'svoiceover.com, where you can look at all sorts of information about the event itself.
Okay.
And then click the order ticket button, and you'll see exactly how to do that. It's very easy, and there's probably 3 or 4, 5 or 6 order ticket buttons all over the place. Also, go to Facebook and check us out there, Facebook/ That's VoiceOver, because there's additional information there that we're updating regularly.
Mm-hmm.
And
the newsletter we're creating.
There's a newsletter that you can sign up for on thatsvoiceover.com, and you get all that juicy information.
Right.
Yeah.
Because it goes from 10 a.m. to 11 p.m.
Right, it's 13 hours.
So it's 13 hours.
And workshop after workshop, it's created in a linear fashion, so that no one misses anything or they have to choose one thing over the other.
I love it.
And what's funny is people go to the website, and they go to the Facebook page, and then they send me a letter. How do I break into VoiceOver? Yeah. Say, it's like, this... go to the event.
Right.
It's designed to answer that question.
Push the buy ticket button.
Yeah. Right.
It's like, this event was designed to answer the question, how do you break in and how do you stay in?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, well, what do you guys get out of?
It's a challenge and it's exciting to do this kind of event and to be involved. I mean, if you're married to a voiceover actor, you want to do things that support that.
Yes.
And,
isn't that lovely?
So that's a piece of it. But like the book, Secrets of Voiceover Success, this event supports the Alzheimer's Association.
Yes.
That's what we get out of it.
We get to drive support, awareness, and dollars to the Alzheimer's Association. And that's also a big plus.
Yes.
As we get older, we start to appreciate those things more.
Yes, and absolutely. Also my dream, you know? Which I never forgot, that I wanted to be a humanitarian. That never left my realm. I had no idea that my dad and the disease that took him out was going to be my vehicle to become a humanitarian. Mm. That I didn't know.
That's beautiful.
And that was a surprise to me.
That's a beautiful way to honor him.
Wow, absolutely.
Yeah.
And there's that old saying, you know, fake it till you make it.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, you have to just start making it and drop the faking part.
Yep.
Yeah,
and
that's
this event is about making it. It's about achieving your dreams and not just thinking about them. And there's been, over the years, a lot of people who sell the idea of success in voiceover on different levels, but they're not really invested in your success.
Yeah.
Right.
And they have no interest in your succeeding or not succeeding having an impact on their success.
Right, Rudy. Mm-hmm.
So
exactly.
This event is really about having people walk away with something tangible that they can look back on and say, you know, it was after that event that I went on to do this
and
or that.
And by the way, we have
had
that.
And it made a difference.
Yeah. We have had that over the years because this event, which is also, again, something great from my perspective, it creates opportunity for people to work or opportunity for people to audition, which could lead to getting an agent.
Yeah.
That, to me, is the juicy part of That's Voiceover, that there's opportunity there.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's got to be about getting the work. I mean, that's what everybody's after.
Right.
Yeah, the work,
how do I break
work,
in
right.
the voiceover?
The work.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, well, you
That's
guys know
beautiful.
What to do. That's voiceover.com.
Absolutely. Get
Check
on your
out.
Computers right
and
now.
We'll see you there. It'll be
right
a good
now.
We'll all get close together.
Well, that's all the time we have today. Joan and Rudy and us are going to go have some drinks, but we'll be back next week with some more awesomeness. We're going to be talking about branding and Joan's book and lots more.
Yes. In the meantime, keep up with us on Facebook, Twitter, and Pinterest at VO Buzz Weekly. You guys take care until next time, and just remember, you always have time for a little buzz.
Don't just listen to VO Buzz Weekly. Watch the show in stunning HD video at VOBuzzWeekly.com, on their YouTube channel, or on the app.
VO Buzz Weekly is sponsored by Chuck Duran's Demos That Rock.
Rock.
The voiceover demo producer to the stars is now available to you. Visit DemosThatRock.com and take your voiceover career to the next level.
See you next time. And remember, you always have time for a little buzz.